VJ Day, what happened after VE Day, was all the Corvettes paying off and tying up. And they sent them all the crews came up to me for 48 hours. Now, just to get their tickets and get demobilized or whatever they were, that's the first part of it, they sent to the divisions.
This is after VJ Day?
After VJ Day. After VE Day started.
After VE had started, yeah. Oh,
that's right. So at one period in the game, I had over 5,000 men there. And the fact there's so many, they used to go to Montreal to sleep and come back the next morning. We didn't mind as long as they kept out of our way and behaved themselves. In fact, some of them were sleeping in the fields. Well, I can't remember why they came through us. Oh, I know, we were operating for Perigot as a discharge center to the division. And that only lasted about 6 weeks. And after VJ Day, they told us to pack it up almost immediately. They gradually got rid of everybody. And the last people out were following March when I went out.
March 46.
March 46, I went to Ottawa. First in and last out.
And so HMC of St. Hyacinth paid off in March 46.
That's right.
But she started again as a new entry training base.
No.
Not St. Hyacinth, I'm thinking of Cornwallis, yeah. All right. St. Hyacinth, yeah. So she paid off, and
well,
that was
all right, I went to Sea Cadets. I went up to Ottawa as director of Sea Cadets.
You went, yeah. Gotcha. I'll get you down to Cornwallis, yeah.
Yeah. And one day...
So you went to Ottawa as director of Sea Cadets, yes?
I was there three years doing that. And then the Navy was opening up and they decided to open up Cornwallis.
Yeah.
To get the new entries away from all the diehards that were causing a little bit of trouble. And that was the reason for reopening Cornwallis. I can remember CNS sent for me and he said, "Oh, I'll tell you afterwards. You turn that off for a second."
I'll leave it on. Tell me what CNS said to you. So you got Cornwallis when she opened up.
Yeah, the same game again. And I remember that was a fight with naval staff. Naval staff and at Wisdom laid down the Cornwallis' commission on a certain date. However, there was nobody at naval staff. In fact, there was nobody in the Navy except Musgrave, who never commissioned the barracks and closed the barracks. And I went down to Cornwallis and saw how far they got on the rehab work. And realized it couldn't be done within 30 days of what the naval staff had laid down. And I went back and fought naval staff. In fact, I told him, I went to the vice chief of the naval staff and told him that it was impossible.
Who was that?
Frankie Houghton.
Frankie Houghton, yeah.
Nelson Lay was the director of...
DOD or something. Yeah.
And, they were mad. The naval staff was most upset about it. The authority had been taken away from them.
Well, yeah.
Well, so they passed another thing, all right, on the advice of the commanding officer, Cornwallis, will now commission us 30 days later.
Yeah.
They had to pass to save their faces.
Yeah. So you commissioned?
So he commissioned. Pat Buzz was XO. I remember Mingy was CNS.
Yes?
No, he wasn't. I'm lying. He was COAC. He said, "Well, that's the reason I'm appointing you, Buzzy." He said, "Buzzy," said, "the two direct opposites." He said, "One lives by the book, and you couldn't give a bugger about the book."
Yes.
I always remember astounding everybody in Cornwallis after about 6 months. I had somebody up at the Fuller's table, and he was a permanent staff, a leading hand. They started to argue the point about the regulations, and I picked the regulation. Carry our armor up and threw it in the waste paper basket. Still see Pat Budge's face.
Yes, he was shocked, was he?
Well, that worked very well, as a matter of fact. He was a hell of a fine officer. There's no getting away from it.
No, he was always a great one for a Skylark, too, Pat Budge.
Oh, well, that was the whole point. But he would have a Skylark, but he made sure it was within the bounds of
dignity and decor, but he was a good one for skylarking, and and the work had to be done first.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you remember any of that?
Oh, we used to play hijinks of one another.
Like what?
Oh, I'd say to him at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or at lunchtime in the nest, I'd say something, nice fine day, and the place is awful dirty. I said, what about quitting work and cleaning the goddamn place up? Oh, anything to change their mind.
Yeah.
Mind you had to get up the day before yesterday. If you're going to be a commanding officer or training establishment, I don't care who you are, you're going to get up the day before yesterday to be aware of what's going on.
Yes.
Like it's an eyesome of those huts. No central heating, it was all stoves, Quebec heaters.
Yes.
They used to get them red hot.
Yes.
I do sometimes wander in the barracks at 2 o'clock in the morning and start going around.
To make sure that the fire was bothering you.
See a red-hot stove, the sentry sound asleep in front of it. And of course, the Army only used 2-decker beds, and we used 3-decker beds, so I had another third more men in the room.
Yeah.
We did have a fire there, too. And when they came to inspect all the buildings, there were 3 living blocks with no chimney from the ceiling to the roof. How the hell we never burned or killed anybody, I still don't know.
No.
But anyway, back to Cornwallis. We have the particular chief petty officers and the divisional officers came in one by one or two or three at a time, and they were the pick of the lot too. So we started off Cornwallis absolutely on a first-class scale. So if anything went wrong, it wasn't the Navy's fault. They put their best effort into it.
Which chief petty officer sticks out most in your mind from those years on the staff?
Oh, I had so many. I don't know. No, I wouldn't dare say. I can't remember. You got to remember now. We're getting closer to where my mind is beginning to wander.
Well, that was to us all. And you stayed in Cornwallis then
for 3 years.
For 3 years.
Yeah. They wanted me to stay another year, and I said no, thank you. I couldn't do it.
Why not?
If you've been 3 years in the training establishment and doing your job as commanding officer, 3 years, 2 years is enough. 3 years is an outside limit. You go crazy.
Yeah.
You spend your time thinking it.
Yeah. Yeah. So you asked to be taken out.
So I asked to resign. Well, retire.
Did you?
So I retired.
Well, that's a very... St. Hyacinth and Cornwallis are two great contributions that you've made to the RCN, and there's nobody denies it. It's and you must feel rather proud of those two establishments.
Oh, yeah. We had a... Well, if you're going to have a training establishment, you've got to work at it, isn't it? So, go back to the RN for a moment. Some of the boys' training establishments have been there for years.
Yes.
And so this becomes a legend. And I don't know whether the commanding officers get up before breakfast and think of things to do or to disrupt the training to make them realize that anything can happen in the Navy or not, or think what's going on or poke their nose where they shouldn't be. This was just a bad habit I had.
Maybe it may have been a good habit.
Well, I thought it was a good habit because how the hell do you know what's going on?
Of course.
You've got to know what's going on in a training establishment, whether it's sodomy or anything else.
Yes.
The only way to find out is to go look for it.
Go look for it. It's not good listening to what people tell you.
No.
So, yes, well, it was. We didn't have the tradition of training in the RCN RN.
No, we didn't. We had
Frobisher and Vindictive had been running as training ships right after Noah's Ark.
That's right. You're quite right. They were the first ones after the first war.
And they had
their shore training establishment. When I went to Whale Island, it had been there 100 years.
Oh, well, all right. I don't know. I'm not talking about the specialists.
No, no, nor am I. I'm talking training established in general. They were all there. Whale Island, Vernon, the training ships. Sure.
Yeah. And then there was the boys' training establishment scattered around the countryside.
Yes.
But,
Did you have many deserters at Cornwallis that couldn't take the,
I had one, as far as I know.
You didn't?
Not while I was there.
No.
They
didn't pack it in and go over the fence?
No.
That surprises me.
Well, they got a good lecture when they came in, Pat and Budge. I think I talked to them at the end of a fortnight. I told them, I suppose this fortnight you're all as miserable as hell and everything else. But I said, it's only really training in what life will be like in the bloody ship when you're sitting on top of one another and they haven't got any room.
Yeah.
I said, if you don't have these laws for the Medes and Persians, I said, this won't work.
What did Pat Budge talk to him about when he came in? Were you ever there?
No, I never listened to his lecture.
No.
That's the general one. Well, he was very good. Well, Pat had been a boy seaman, so he realized how they felt.
Yes. Yes, he had a great sympathy for them.
Yeah. But he was strict with them, and he explained why he was strict. The thing is that I found that I think most anybody with any sense found that if he explained to a sailor why he was being punished or why he couldn't do so-and-so or why he had to do so-and-so, that he understood completely and he was quite happy to do it. But if you willy-nilly just don't train them that way, they don't understand. That was the trouble during the war. They didn't get enough of it.
No.
They got a couple of weeks at the barracks and nobody knew really there the answers.
And then off to sea.
Yeah.
In the corvette.
I'm surprised we didn't have more deserters than we did during the war.
Yes. In retrospect, I never thought of it at the time, but yes.
Yeah.
It was terrible. You know, we had an expansion of 50 to 1 as opposed to the RN's 10 to 1.
Oh, I know, yeah.
And we expanded too much, it's been said. Did you ever enter that controversy?
I never entered the controversy. I think we did, actually. Too rapidly. But the trouble was...
You do think we did.
We didn't do it in equal proportions. We'd started at the beginning and set a pace to do it. We had no buildings or anything to do, so we only could do with what we had. But it took us a year to get any buildings. But this time we were so far behind that we had to shorten down the training time. Because then by that time the ships were starting to come out.
Yeah.
Then we got a gap again when those ships were coming out. We got too many, didn't know what the hell to do with them. Then the ships again reverse process.
Yeah. Well, when I look back on it, you know, I did courses after the war and I was amazed at how I got through a whole damn war knowing so little.
Yeah, well, I know. This is what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think we put up a creditable performance, I suppose, generally speaking, in the RCM.
Yeah. Oh, well, no getting away from it. I think the RCM did bloody wonders. No getting away from it. Considering what training they had before to see, I don't know. There must be one person in the ship who knew something.
Perhaps one.
Yeah.
My first corvette, my captain was permanent force. There was one permanent force leading seaman. That's all.
Yeah.
The first lieutenant had never been to sea before. I had had a year as a midship. The mate had a coasting ticket and hadn't been to sea for 30 years. The other sub had never been to sea before.
Yeah.
And we sailed.
Who was the skipper?
Freddie Grubb.
Oh, that's what I thought it was, yeah.
That's a terrible burden to put on anybody like Freddie Grubb, you know. Poor old Freddie. Bunch of ignoramuses.
Yeah.
And he's going out And
all the other ones, the other ones were nearly as bad.
They were.
Who was the VR commander? In charge of one of the first corvettes. Got halfway out of the harbor, I'd go to England, he came back in again.
Why?
Scared.
Oh, I never heard that one. Is that so, eh? An RCNVR captain of a corvette.
Yeah. He was a commander.
He was a commander?
I think he was a commander. Anyway, he's 2.5 striper anyway.
Yeah.
He came from the central part.
What the hell did he say when he got back alongside to the admiral?
I know he said a signal or something. I think they told him to do that. He was scared. Well, he wasn't scared of the sea. He was scared that he couldn't handle the ship.
Yeah.
So something like that.
Oh, well, everybody gets cold feet in their first command. Was it his first command? I suppose it was.
Oh, I suppose it was, yeah. It must have been.
Yeah. Well, the admiral probably just sent him on leave and sent a replacement and gave him a shore job.
Oh, yeah, we sent him. I can't remember what happened to him.
But, yes, I think in conclusion, there's nothing else really...
You can go on asking me questions about St. Hyacinth and the Cornwallis and come up with dribble.
It was an important job, well done, and on behalf of Dr. Douglas, the historian, I thank you for having me here and telling us.
If you want any more, come again.
If I want any more, I certainly will come again, and thank you, sir.
I've got a scroll. I'll show you where you go. Before we left St. Hyacinth, City Council and all the people presented me with a scroll giving me the freedom of the city. Mm. Although that wasn't really for me, it was really for the Navy.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to find a place to put it. The museum suggested I send it to the Admiralty House. The reason the Admiralty House now has a museum,
yeah,
for the Atlantic Command. And I think the museum here told me that it shouldn't be lost, but the right place would be at the Atlantic Command, because I was in the Atlantic Command.
Right. That's true. That brings up the question of your other naval papers. What have you got? Dr. Douglas would like those to go into the National Archives, if possible, if you haven't thought of anything else you want to do with them.
I haven't got any. All I got is my first class to... Oh, no, I've given them all to my son.
The
enlistment privileges for the First War.
Yeah, well, and you gave your photograph albums to your...
Well, my son's got those.
Which son is this? What's his name?
Philip
Musgrave.
He lives in Vancouver.
Philip Musgrave of Vancouver has your photograph albums.
Do they want the albums?
We want to know where they are.
Well, why the archives as opposed to the museum?
Well, either one.
Well, I asked Donnie Charles a couple of times. He thought the archives might be the right place. I don't know. I just don't want it to be lost, that's all.
Oh, it won't be lost.
No.
It'll be catalogued and be there for everybody to see in the National Archives or in the Maritime Museum. The important thing is that...
Well, okay, I'll give you a job to do. I can't write any longer.
Yeah.
I have trouble even writing them a check. I don't know why they cash them. Well, you write to Douglas and tell him I've got this scroll, which is really something that should be kept.
Yes.
I thought of sending it to Admiralty House Museum because it had been in that command during the war. But if somebody thinks it should be in the archives, it's okay with me. The only thing I wanted, if he wants it to put it in the archives, will you send it for me? That's short to you.
Before we go, yes, I'll do that, and wherever it ends up, Dr. Douglas will write to you and discuss it, but I think probably your scroll should go in the museum where it can be seen. It was other kind of papers that I was thinking of for the archives.
Oh, well, the only ones I've got are my certificate out of college and Flims is a... I haven't any other papers.
No. And your photograph albums are with your son, Philip.
Yeah.
And that's all we want to know, really, just where they are in case
somebody
wants to look at them to check something, who was where, when, with whom.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, on that note, we'll close, and I'll come and look at your scroll.
Okay. Stay there with you. Stay where you are.
I will.